Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning. Good morning. I'm the epoxy thousand leprous dogs of a morning to you. I don't know how to go.
I was going
to
say, do we sort of, we're approaching the point where we need like a badly morning jingle.
I was genuinely on the cusp of doing that this morning because I was thinking, you know, when things are really good, we do a kind of upbeat, goodly morning jingle. And then I was thinking, this is actually so bad that I should make something. So if I were to reveal my YouTube search history now,
oh, yeah,
it would be like hell scream sound effects. That's where I was going that, but none of them were convincing enough. I was just going to do like a really long scream and copy the middle of it and extend it out so it was just something like ah, but for ages, and I was gonna put some echo and stuff like that on it. But then you see, I was sitting here, it was 11 o'clock and I thought we were gonna start at 11, so I owe you an apology for besmirching you on Twitter by saying you were late. So I apologize for that, because you did say 11:30. Then I was gonna make a wisecrack about maybe something happened to him, and then I thought, well, I don't know, I feel like it could be tempting fate a little bit if I said something like that about you. It would be like I get an email.
Oh, maybe he's dead. And then it's like, I am actually dead.
You are actually dead, and I would feel bad.
I am dead, actually. This is my ghost. I have unfinished business with Arsenal Football Club, and that's why my spirit lingers on in the mortal world.
Yeah, you're in some kind of purgatory, which I think is going to last forever. Arsenal just have to be good again, and then I can find my final resting place 72 years later. Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra with the ghost of James, as always. James,
it does feel a bit like that. Yeah. There is something very purgatorial about the Arsenal experience, particularly in this kind of weird, you know, COVID, no fans environment. Like, there is part of me that sort of is still kind of hoping this is all a really bad dream that we're going to wake up from one day.
Yeah, I saw a tweet there last week, you know, when they were selling tickets for the Europa League game, and somebody, I can't remember who it was, said, finally, we'll be able to get in and boo the team.
Yeah. I mean, genuinely, I was, you know, in the queue with everyone else on Saturday morning, and I have got a ticket for, thank goodness, for the Europa League team. If you're going to watch an Arsenal team, let it be the Europa League team rather than the Premier League team. I am looking forward to that, as strange as I imagine it will probably be. But what happened last night did nothing to kind of further whet my appetite. I mean, I suppose if you wanted to play a really horrible sound to start the podcast, you could have just played the sound of David Luiz's head colliding with that of Raul Jimenez.
Oh my God.
Genuinely, it was disturbing.
Because as I've said to you many times, I sit here and I watch the games without the fake crowd noise. Actually, I realized about 30 seconds into the game that I had the game on with the fake crowd noise. So I switched over to the other Sky Sports channel to make sure I didn't have the fake crowd noise. And for the first time ever, I kind of wish I did.
Because I mean, I hate to break it to you, I actually did have the fake crowd noise on because I didn't realise that there was the option at that point.
Right.
And you very much heard it anyway.
Right.
You very, very much heard it anyway. It was that loud and horrible.
It was sickening sound. And I think the news this morning is that Raul Jimenez has undergone an operation for a fractured skull. All we can do is, you know, wish him a full and speedy recovery. It's a very, very serious injury. You know, obviously, Petr Cech experienced that. And wasn't there a guy, he was at Hull City, I think, who had a similar kind of injury. It was a headed, an aerial
check. That's right.
Ryan Mason?
Yeah, I think it was Ryan
Mason. And unfortunately for him, it ended his career. He couldn't continue. So fingers crossed for Raul Jimenez because, he's a good player to watch. And for anyone to experience that kind of an injury is really shocking. So fingers crossed to him and, everyone involved there.
It was weird because I don't know if you had the same commentary, but Don Goodman was on the commentary for Sky.
Mm.
He suffered a fractured skull
right.
as a player. So it must have been a really horrible experience for him to watch that happen. He was out for 6 months
right.
with his and did make a comeback. But we could have done a whole podcast on that incident and the way it is handled and the issues that exist in football around not taking head injury seriously enough.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's genuinely ridiculous. I know there are protocols, but you cannot convince me that David Luiz, having been involved in that collision and thankfully for him, not as seriously hurt as Raul Jimenez, you cannot convince me that he was right to continue. He had a huge cut. I know that there are concussion protocols that he had to go through, but he was clearly uncomfortable. I'm not trying to be smart here or trying to be funny in any way, because it's difficult to know if some of the defending that David Luiz was involved in was in part down to the incident and the collision of heads, because we've seen him defend poorly before, and I'm not trying to be smart, but I think if you look at a couple of the incidents, he is somewhat in a bit of a daze. And even if he's not concussed, and I'm not sure that that's the case, being involved in an incident like that and seeing how serious it was for Jimenez and the concern and the shock that you would have, you can't be properly focused on a game. And even leaving aside all that, he should not have continued. I understand why managers and what have you are reluctant to make a change in those circumstances if the player is deemed okay, because you only have three substitutes. You don't want to make a change 5 minutes or 6 minutes into a game, whatever it might be. But, it's got to open up the debate and the discussion about head injuries and temporary subs or whatever it might be, or even an additional sub, that it doesn't cost you if a player is going off with a head injury, having suffered something like that. Like, even the slightest clash of heads sees the referee stop the play. So there's at least an acknowledgement that head injuries are serious and more serious than generally any other sort of tackle or incident that happens on the pitch. But the rules around those injuries are just not sufficient. They're not good enough.
No, and I think it's funny, sometimes someone who's sort of outside the sport can shed a different light on it. I was watching the game with my wife, and she's not a big football fan at all, but she just found it so insane and absurd that David Luiz A, played on, and B, that it wasn't able to be replaced without it costing a team a substitution. And it's funny, sometimes you get accustomed to things because you're so habituated. For someone outside to be like, well, that's obviously absolute insanity, was kind of like, put it very starkly. I mean, I think it is crazy. We had an experience, I'm sure it was a few years ago, Shkodran Mustafi suffered a concussion in a game and played the full 90 minutes. It was in the run-up to the 2017 FA Cup final, and he ended up missing the final, I think, because of the concussion. But it was a situation, a game against Sunderland, he was allowed to carry on, and then after the game, sort of developed symptoms as a consequence that kept him out for quite some time.
Well, that's the thing about concussion, is it's not like you either have it or you don't. It sort of can develop over time, can't it? The impacts of those.
And I think, I mean, to be honest, Luiz coming off at half-time, it kind of makes a mockery of him staying on in the first place. Do you know what I mean? It makes it all the more clear and evident that should not have happened.
What did you make of the explanation that it was because he wasn't comfortable with the cut? It wasn't to do with concussion. It was to do with his inability to head the ball, because I just guess it was too painful. As we could see, there was blood seeping through his bandage.
Yeah, that's not ideal, is it? I mean, what I would say is maybe Luiz wasn't concussed, But I'm not, and granted, I'm not a medical expert, but the people I do know who do understand medicine have concerns that the nature of the testing he was able to go through in that, whatever it was, 5 minutes on the touchline is not really sufficient. And yeah, maybe he wasn't concussed, maybe he was just cut, but I don't think the protocols allow for that to be really rigorously assessed. And we've seen that in the past with Mustafi. Who knows what we'll discover about Luiz. But yeah, you know, one of those things that is a genuine accident in football, and you know, nobody really can be held accountable or blamed in any way. But just, I do think the game needs to get serious about how it deals with this stuff. And it's interesting, you know, a point where brain injury is as related to heading the ball and dementia is being much more talked about. There's still this kind of prehistoric attitude towards really severe head trauma like this, and I just think it needs to be dealt with, especially against this backdrop of, you know, managers, the majority of managers wanting five subs, not being granted that, then not having an opportunity to make a free substitution for a head injury kind of adds insult to injury. And I just think, yeah, it needs to be addressed right now.
Yeah, it is a pressing issue for sure. And again, just all the very best to Raul Jimenez, and hopefully he can make a full recovery. God.
When something like that happens, I was kind of thinking, is this game just going to sort of peter out a little bit, you know? Because sometimes when you get to see a really traumatic injury like that, it does sort of impede performance. But I actually thought Wolves responded to it pretty well. You know, given what they had suffered, and Arsenal, you know, I mean, Arsenal weren't great.
No, I mean, without being cynical about the whole thing, it was maybe not something you could take advantage of, but if one team was going to be shell-shocked by that injury,
you would expect it
to be Wolves. I know there's the other side of that where it's like, okay, we dig in and we do it for our teammate and we, you know, we redouble our efforts. Look, it was not good. I don't know. I think I'm in quite a strange place this morning, and I'm finding it difficult to have cohesive thoughts about what's going on right now and how it's going on and how we deal with it and how we cope with it and how we fix it. How do we find the solutions? You know, it could be the podcast in which I don't know is, you know, the world record, the world record phrase, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, I mean, listen, it's my catchphrase, but I think that the reason it is simply because we can't be 100% sure. And when you look at what's wrong with this team, you know, it's very, very difficult to apportion it to one thing. In fact, it's impossible. And it's even difficult to kind of, you know, say to what extent is this the coach's fault? To what extent is it the player's fault? To what extent is it management's fault? To what extent is the owner's fault? Like, all of these things are definitely contributing. And some of the things that we hypothesized might provide, I don't know, solutions, you know, at the moment just aren't.
It is a very unpleasant cocktail of many things, isn't it? You know, I think you're right. It's not just Arteta. It's not just the players. It's not just the recruitment. It's not just the owners. And I don't mean that in the sense that it's about money, but, you know, how the club has been run over the last number of years. You know, it's not just an individual thing with certain players, not just a collective lack of form. It is all of those things. So trying to find a way out of this sort of malaise that we're in is going to be really tough. So let's just talk a little bit, you know, do what we normally do when it comes to a game like this, and talk about the team selection and if there were any issues in there for you, or any surprises, or, you know, things that you might like to have seen different.
Just trying to think now. I mean, listen, clearly there's a lot of focus on the coach at the moment, and I think I think I'm seen as someone who has a more positive view of Mikel Arteta than others. I think there are clearly problems with what he's doing at present. I do have a modicum of sympathy about the fact that I think, you know, when I looked at the Leeds game, the two players I thought Arsenal missed most were David Luiz and Thomas Partey. And he was again without them, effectively. You know, he had 50% Luiz or whatever he was without Partey again. That midfield, he didn't have Elneny either. That midfield of Xhaka and Ceballos is really bad at present.
It is really, really, bad. Really bad. There's a really good graphic going around. I don't know if you've seen it.
I just saw you tweet it, yeah.
Yeah, it's made by a guy from Poland whose Twitter handle is unpronounceable to me, so I'm really sorry about this. It's at P. Warizhnov. Or I can't remember. Anyway, look, I'll tweet the original of it because the guy who made the graphic deserves the credit for it. And it's the passing networks, and you can just see this nothingness, an absolute nothingness in the middle of the pitch from an Arsenal perspective. There are clusters of players like Willian and Bellerin are basically in the same area of the pitch. Saka, Tierney and Joe Willock over on the left-hand side of the pitch. Amazingly, Gabriel is further forward than Granit Xhaka. Aubameyang is this lone guy in the middle of the pitch who just doesn't get anything. Ceballos in that kind of that hybrid right back position that we saw Elneny in a few weeks ago. You know, so it's not by accident. It is by design, but it just demonstrates the lack of balance that we have in this team. And I think you're right. The midfield for me is a major issue. It's not working at all, and I like you have a little bit of sympathy because, you know, our £50 million signing who would make a difference is not available to us and won't be available to us for another few weeks by the sounds of things, which is really shit.
That's worrying. Shit. It's very worrying given how much of a effect he seems to have on our midfield performances. I mean, just to touch on that kind of pass map thing, I was flicking through the statistics this morning, and I think Arsenal's most frequent pass combination was Granit Xhaka to Gabriel, which, I mean, tells you its own story, you know, going backwards. And just on the team lineup, I mean, who knows? Maybe this way of playing, maybe with this personnel, maybe there is a way to make that click. My concern is that in Xhaka and Ceballos, certainly with those guys, you've got people who are very comfortable sitting deep, you know, playing just in front of the back four. And then through the middle, centrally, what you've got is Joe Willock as a kind of 8/10 and Aubameyang. And I would argue that neither of those players are kind of high touch volume players, really. Like Aubameyang's, you know, people will make a lot of fuss about he doesn't get a lot of touches. He never gets a lot of touches. That's sort of what he does. You know, he's someone who's off the ball and getting on the end of things. But Willock is not someone who is like a fulcrum of a team. He's someone who can, like, you know, although he might play as a number 10, he's really there to press, capitalise on breaks, you know, again, get Rumby on into the final third. I just feel like when you look at that diagram that you mentioned, there is just a huge gulf in the middle of the pitch, basically.
Yeah. I'll include that graphic in the show notes so you can click into your app and click the link and see what we're talking about there. Yeah. You know, and weirdly, I thought Joe Willock was probably our most, I don't know what the right word is here, but at least he tried to make things happen. I think he was involved in the build-up to the goal. I mean, it was a smart pass down to Tierney in that cross, which eventually went out for the corner, and the corner came out and was headed in by Gabriel. You know, there was some attacking intent. There was some desire from him to make things happen, but there were, you know, Xhaka, as I sort of was texting you last night, just, it was so slow all the time. Just so ponderous. And there's a really interesting passage of play around the 57, 58 minute mark where we move the ball down the right-hand side. We bring it inside to a man on the edge of the box, and that man is Granit Xhaka. And I don't know, you know, fair play to him for trying to get up there and make something happen, I guess. But that's not where you want to see Granit Xhaka. That's not where he does things. He played a pass. It was cut out. Wolves came forward. I think we eventually won the ball back. Gabriel won the ball back. As he does, he sort of intercepted and got there first and was looking to drive the ball forward. And Xhaka sort of took it off him and absolutely leathered a pass at Rob Holding 20 yards back down the pitch, you know, in our defensive area. And I'm thinking, well, how can you ever build some forward momentum when there's a guy in your team who is just who thinks like that? I don't get it. Why didn't he let Gabriel take the ball and just slot back into Gabriel's position, as he did at other times in the game when Gabriel went forward? Xhaka slotted in there as the left-sided centre half almost. So I just, you know, there are certain things about the way that we play and the way we move the ball. You look at the way Wolves played and how quickly they could get the ball forward with 2, 3, 4 passes, through the midfield. Obviously, it helps to have some players in the center of the park who can then, you know, shift the ball left or right or wherever you want to move it. But it was just, it was hard to watch, really hard to watch.
Yeah, Xhaka, some people I think were kind of at breaking point with Xhaka 3 or 4 years ago, to be honest. But I've always sort of seen a bit more balance in what he can offer, seen that there were positives there at times. And, you know, even as recently as the cup run in 2017 and certainly in 2020, earlier this year, you've seen positive dimensions to his game. Those are really not there right now. And I don't know if they're coming back. I mean, he looks like a player. I think we're probably watching the final season of Granit Xhaka at Arsenal.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. It's time to move on and to do something different. But can I ask you, you know, you mentioned the cup final and winning the cup. You know, Ceballos and Xhaka worked in that period. I mean, it wasn't brilliant, but it worked. It was functional enough for us to beat Man City and to beat Chelsea in a cup final. So to what do we put this decline down to? Is it that they were playing above themselves in the previous period and this is who they are? Or is it just much worse now because collectively we are having some problems?
That is really hard to know. Yeah. I mean, I do think that basically in the FA Cup final and in the run-up to it, they were playing in a system that provided them more support, you know, that was... I accept that the three at the back wasn't working, but I'm kind of gutted that Arteta changed it, actually. I know we had a conversation during the international break where I sort of said, I sort of hope he doesn't, in a weird way, if he doesn't want to. And I kind of feel like he's into that. I always admit there's a great analogy Amy Lawrence made about Unai Emery when he was really struggling at Arsenal. She described him as like a manager in a horror movie who is trying to start a car and he's got a whole thing of keys and he's trying to find the right key before the killer catches him. And I feel like that's a dangerous place to kind of slip into. And I slightly fear that Arteta's moved away from the only thing he had that kind of worked. And because yesterday I just thought the team were completely chaotic, you know. I thought they were entirely unstructured and Wolves could break at them so easily. I mean, Wolves seemed to me to sort of stop attacking us in the second half, which was an absolute blessing and a mercy because they could have scored more.
Mm. I mean, look, yeah. So you're sort of worried that Arteta has compromised his principles, in inverted commas.
A little bit. I mean, there are things that he was doing that I'll give you an example. Like, we went to Wolves during Project Restart and we played Ainsley Maitland-Niles as a left wing back against Traore, and he bossed it, absolutely bossed it. Mm. And in this game, we had a back four, which meant that half the time Tierney was one-on-one with Traore, which did not pan out well, as we saw. And the rest of the time, Bukayo Saka, who really is probably our most exciting attacking player, was looking over his shoulder, thinking, the first time they scored was like the first time Traore was left one-on-one against Tierney, because Saka spent half the game going backwards, worried about. And I just kind of feel like he's rolled the dice to try and get something different, but I actually think we're worse off.
But, I mean, this isn't the first time that he's changed. I mean, the change to a back three was a move away from what he'd done in almost every game, you know, from the moment he arrived when he took over in December last year. And we started after Project Restart with a back four in the two games against Man City and against Brighton. And it was a move to a back three after that Brighton defeat, which was him trying to do something different to you know, get the team more functional. And it worked, obviously, you know, to an extent. I don't think we played brilliant football, but it worked. So I don't really see the issue. Like, changing is not the issue itself, but yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, I suppose what I think is that these centre-halves, these central midfielders, most of them have got vulnerabilities, and there's something about the back three that protected them, you know, that shields them a little bit. I accept entirely going forward it wasn't doing the business. But now I've got no idea what Arteta wants to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, the conviction has wavered for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's part of why I'm in this kind of weird place where I don't quite know what to think, you know, because I can recognize, and I think you can recognize, and most people listening will recognize, as we've said previously, the medium to long-term job that's required at Arsenal, you know, to put right a lot of things that have been wrong for a long time. That's obvious. But the short term is impossible to ignore as well.
Like, the club have two jobs. I think we talked about this a little bit before, but the club have two jobs. They have to think about the mid to long term, and they also have to think about the next game and this season. And in a funny way, the roles of head coach or manager, that role is not always ideally suited to do both those things, which I know might sound confusing, but, you know, I feel like somebody needed to look after this squad and have one eye on 3 years, but it feels like a lot of the decisions that were driven by the coach, Aubameyang, Willian, Luiz, are very much kind of short-term decisions. I mean, it's all a mess.
Yeah, I mean, there was a question here from JB at Gunner Punner. Should the club have been more honest with everyone about how long it was going to take instead of pretending we're on the cusp of Europe and making expensive short-term punts? And that's not a typo.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I is it a question of demarcation to an extent in that, like, the manager's job should be more about week to week, day to day, game to game, and the strategy for the 2 years or 3 years or long term should be that of the sporting director or the technical director or the director of football. I mean, we're only like a few months into this current setup. Like, I know Arteta's been there for just under a year.
Yeah.
And Edu has been there a while, but was basically Raul's man, you know, to face up to whatever. You know, he now has more responsibility, I should say. So it's only a couple of months since Raul Sanyehi got sacked, our previous director of football, who I think it's fair to say did not make decisions or many decisions that were part of some kind of cohesive long-term strategy for squad building. Right, I don't think that's fair. Even if some of the players that were brought in under his watch, I think you can look at Tierney, you can look at Martinelli, you know, as good young players who could be part of our future for a long time. So, is there too much going on for one man or for one man and Edu to be working on, or is this a case that it literally has been the most chaotic end to a transfer window because we fired our director of football in the middle of a pandemic and all the associated COVID stuff that was going on? You know, how do you find the justification for time and patience and all those kind of things when week by week it's just getting worse on the pitch. And I'm not saying fire Arteta or anything like that, but you have to start thinking about conversations when the performances on the pitch aren't matching.
Well, here's what I think about the technical director sort of executive situation. Basically, when Mikel Arteta says, I really want Willian, it has to be somebody's job to say no. It has to be somebody's job to say, I hear that you want a player like Willian, but that is not a good move.
Sure. I agree with that. But at the time when Mikel Arteta said, I want Willian,
Arsenal were in absolute chaos behind the scenes.
Well, also, the guy who could get Willian is big mates with Willian's agent. So there was no check or balance there. So if Mikel Arteta had said, I want Willian, and somebody had said, look, we can get you Willian, but we're only willing to give him a one-year deal with a plus one dependent on X, Y, or Z, right? Mm-hmm, That's what we're willing to do to get you Willian, because giving 32-year-old Willian a three-year deal is fucking stupid. That, I think, would have been okay. And if Willian wasn't open to a one-plus-one deal, well, best of luck to you. You might as well sign your two-year deal at Chelsea or go somewhere else. We don't care. We'll find you a different player, with the same characteristics or whatever as Willian, right? Yeah, I think that would have been reasonable, but we did not have... We had somebody there who would facilitate a deal which was to the benefit of the player, to the benefit of the agent, and not necessarily to the benefit of Arsenal, as we're seeing.
That's exactly what I mean. So what I'm saying is these are difficult conversations. You know, it might even be, hypothetically, that Arteta would say, well, I really want Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang next season. And it might be that if you are a good sporting director with a genuine eye on the kind of mid to long-term future, you might have to sit down with that coach and say, you know, potentially, I don't agree with that move and we're not going to make it for these business reasons. Mm. Now, listen, I know a lot of people would have wanted the Aubameyang contract signed, but I suppose the point I'm making is you want somebody there who is kind of able to say to a manager, I understand this is what you want, but for the health of the club, we also need to look at this. And I just feel like when you look at what happened at Arsenal in the last 12 months, that hasn't even been there. And although we look at the last transfer window and say, well, we came out of it relatively well, given the chaos that was unfolding behind the scenes, I do think we will feel the damage of that for some time. You know, I think we were in an absolute mess. And I think that we'll be dealing with that for a while. I suppose what I'm saying is, what do Edu do? No, I suppose what I'm saying is, I think that, you know, there is an aspect to this which is, a beyond Arteta's remit. And in a way, it's concerning. You know, at a time when Sanye was on the way out, there was doubt over Edu. The club consequently put a lot of the eggs in the basket of Arteta, because they were like, well, he's the one good thing we've got going for us. And now obviously, the really troubling thing is that feels much less certain. It feels much less like a surefire win.
Yeah. I mean...
But the club have put themselves kind of in this position where that's where their eggs are.
Yeah. You know, and Arteta has the authority as the manager. It really...
Yeah, I mean, does Arteta work for Edu or does Edu work for Arteta? Do
well,
you know
that's
what I mean?
It. Like, I mean, yeah, the closeness. They talk about their closeness and how well they work together. But let's give some credit where it's due. I think Gabriel has been a good signing, so well done. Mm-hmm. I think Thomas Partey will be a good signing, so well done. But if
there are others, There's not. It's not all. It's not all bad recruitment. You know, I think like Tierney, Martinelli, we mentioned. There have been a few others here and there, but there are some egregious outliers.
Yeah, yeah, I know the one you're talking about. I mean, it feels to me like there is very, very much a piece missing at executive level, you know? And I don't know, when you make somebody manager, how easy it is to fill that.
Put someone in above them.
Or to put somebody in who's got more authority. I mean, on paper, Edu should be the guy who's deciding the strategy of the club in terms of playing style, in terms of recruitment, in terms of, you know, how we get to where we're supposed to get to or where we say we want to get to. But I don't see Edu overruling Arteta. Do you?
No, I think making Arteta manager was a mistake, actually. I do think that. I think that was a unnecessary move. And I think that it disrupts the hierarchy. It makes things a lot less clear. I think maybe Edu still being there is a mistake. Well, it's very, very hard for us to judge Edu, but you know, he is very much associated with the previous regime, and it's part of the rationale for, like, oh, well, we're happy for Farmy to move on is the association with the previous regime. It's strange that should not apply kind of across the board.
Yeah. But again, here we are with, you know, only a few months of these two working together in tandem, and logic would tell you that they probably need a bit more time and a few more windows, et cetera, et cetera, you know, to put in place whatever plans they might have.
But it's the classic thing in football.
Yeah.
Like, there are five problems at Arsenal. Maybe more than five. Maybe there are 50. But the one that's easiest to fix is you change the head coach. You change the guy who picks the team and you know, does the training sessions. Because that's one change you can make that sometimes produces a different result.
Well, look, we did it just over a year ago and it did produce, you know, slightly different results.
Yeah, for a bit. The same when we appointed Emery, though. You know, we had better results for a bit.
So what is this? Is this like a problem of foundations? A problem of culture or psyche or something like that's running through the club? And if it is, do you not then need to change it radically or give somebody the time to implement ideas which might change it?
I mean, yeah. I mean, maybe. Like, maybe what we saw is, with both Emery and Arteta, a kind of new manager bounce, if you can call it that. You know, in Emery's case, it produced a 23-match unbeaten run. In Arteta's case, it ended up with an FA Cup. But ultimately, you know, when that fades away, the problems aren't that different, I don't think. In terms of what you see in the team, the problems aren't that different. I mean, the way it looks on the pitch is to me, the issues are similar. And that's not to say they're the same coach. I'm just saying, to me, that's just the same underlying things endure.
Yeah, well, look, one of the things that, you know, I talked about this morning in the blog was, like, just not knowing what it is that we are trying to do on the pitch. Like, what is, in inverted commas, the Arsenal way? What is our identity in terms of playing style? You know, where is it? Because I don't see it. I don't see...
It's gone completely in the last couple of games, for sure.
I mean, there was something identifiable there, even if we didn't necessarily...
Even if we hated it.
Yeah.
Like, you could say, in three bullet points, how do Arsenal play? You could sort of do that.
Yeah.
But since he's changed it, you know, it is now sort of impossible. And that was Emery's problem, wasn't it? Is that he changed so much that you just had no idea. It's the lack of clarity that is always the problem at Arsenal. You know, are we... And it works on a micro and macro level. You know, what is it we're trying to do with the team? But more broadly, what are we trying to do for the next 5 years? You know, what are we building towards? I insist that if there is a clear adherence and direction to a plan and an idea, I insist that fans will buy into it. Like they did 100% in the post-Emirates Stadium move era, buy into a philosophy that was not necessarily tied to results. And if that existed now, I think supporters would get on board with it. Because I don't think fans are that unrealistic. I don't think anyone thinks we should be winning the league.
Yeah. You know? Is it sort of the mixed messages in that we're a club with the need to implement a new culture, a new strategy, a long, medium, long-term plan, but we're doing things which mean you're being judged, not more harshly, but we're doing things which mean in the short term, if you don't produce, they feel more egregious, if you like. So if this summer Arsenal had gone out and they bought in a 19-year-old winger, and, you know, that was somebody who was going to play where Pepe played, there's competition for places. If we got a young centre half, I mean, we did. Oh, Christ, I mean, we brought in Gabriel. We've got William Saliba. You know, if we didn't hand an extension to Aubameyang and, you know, sold him and reinvested the money in a young striker, if you kind of go all in on one thing, at least if it doesn't work, people can identify what that thing is. Right? You can say, well, this is what they're trying to do. It hasn't quite worked, or it's not quite working, or it shows promise here, and maybe if we tweak a bit there. But what we've got is this weird mix of, like, short-termism, old players, and talented young players who, I suppose, are the hope that we've got, you know? Because you're only going to be able to squeeze so much out of Willian and Luiz and maybe even Aubameyang at this stage. You know, Lacazette fading at 29 years of age, heading towards 30. You know, so the hope rests in Tierney. It rests in Saka. It rests in Martinelli. And to a lesser extent, some of the other young players, you know, like Gabriel. I don't mean to a lesser extent, but, you know, Willock, Nelson, Nketiah, Smith Rowe, these kids who may or may not make it, but who might provide you with the financial foundations, you know, if you bring them through and you sell them like an Iwobi, to sort of build your squad in that way. But what we've got is this toothpaste and orange juice thing going on here. This is not this is not peanut butter and chocolate. This is toothpaste and orange juice. The two things just do not go together.
Yeah, and I think there is a stylistic issue. I think both... I think fundamentally, you know, Arsenal's coaches over the last couple of years have tried to do things with players that weren't necessarily suited to it, and we've paid for that. I mean, the one thing that is consistent between Emery and Arteta pretty much is sort of that the underlying metrics aren't very good. Even in their good spells, the underlying metrics say we are a mid-table team. So... I kind of just keep coming, sort of thinking, well, are we just a mid-table club? And we keep sort of going, I wonder why these coaches keep reverting to being mid-table. And the answer is, because that's how good we are.
Well, is that not then an issue of personnel? Or is it, you know, is it a case of, yeah, well, I mean, this is where I'm confused, because I look at a team like Leeds, pound for pound, if you like, you know, in... the individual
wealth.
Sure. Okay. Well, they're mid-table, I guess. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, I think the league has changed, and we have not changed enough with it. I mean, you know, we're not. Listen. I mean, the points gaps aren't that big. You know, I'm not. We're not 20 points off the top.
No, we are. We're 4 points off fifth.
Yeah, I'm not really paying any attention to the league table at this point because it's so volatile. And this season, more than ever, I think, weirdly, kind of anything is possible. Even though, in a funny way, I sort of think the league season is fucked already. But, I think it's not just the players that are sort of have that mid-table feel. I feel like we operate... I just don't think we We don't make good decisions.
So as a football club, you're not just talking about Mikel Arteta. And I think, you know, some of the decisions that he's made are obviously open to question, given what's happening so far this season. That's entirely reasonable. You're judged as a coach on results and the decisions that you make in terms of team selections. But you know, is this... You're talking about as a football club. You're talking about as an entity, as an organization, the decisions that we've made. And I guess this goes right to the top then, to the owners. The decisions that we have made, like who we get to run the club, who looks after the football side of things, who sanctions the money for certain deals, who's running the commercial side of the business, what the actual ethos is of the football club, like the attitude from the top down has an influence on the decisions that you make and the way you're perceived.
Primarily, I would say, in terms of like, you know, if we look at the decisions the club's made, say with contracts or transfers, a lot of that has to be laid at the feet of the former head of football. And I think it's very fair to ask questions of, was there appropriate process for that person to get that job? You know, I think that's...
No, there wasn't.
Well, there you go.
There absolutely wasn't. He just got a recommendation from Gazidis, and the Cronkies like Gazidis, and they said, okay. Like, it's insane to me. And I wrote about this at the time, and I'm sure I said it on the podcast. It is absolutely insane to me that to run the most important department in an organization, football club, running the football side of a football club, you could give that job to somebody just because a guy who's fucking off to AC Milan gives you a nod and says, yeah, he's a good guy, he'll do a good job, despite the fact he's never done that job anywhere. You're talking about a multi-million pound organization who've given the top job to a guy just because some other guy said so. In no other industry or business would that kind of recruitment policy be looked at as anything other than laughable, that there's no process, no interviews, no due diligence, none of it. You just give it to that guy because that other guy said so. Mm. It's just not the right way to run anything.
No, and I think that has held us back massively. And like I say, I think we'll be paying for it, both literally and figuratively, for a little while. But you know, there are all these kind of umbrella issues, you know, around the way the club is run more generally. But I do think that we have to look at the technical side of it, and we have to look at Arteta as well. And the troubling thing, and the reason I guess there's going to be so much discussion about the manager's position, is when you're an experienced manager and then things start going badly, at least as a supporter, you can go, well, they turned it around before. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Or they've got a track record of weathering the storm.
Yeah.
In the case of Arteta, just as, you know, his inexperience enabled us to project positively onto him and to say, maybe he's Klopp, maybe he's Guardiola, maybe he's a genius, it also leaves a big vacuum when crisis bites.
For you sure.
Know? And we have no idea if he can handle this.
That's true. But I think that's what we did
sign up for that.
We did sign up for it. We accepted that. Yeah, you know, as a football club, and you know, we knew that this was a young guy with no experience at management. And I think, you know, there's probably a really interesting discussion to be had about coach versus manager. You can be a good coach, but not necessarily a good manager. You know, there are countless examples of that in football down the years. Now, we don't know one way or the other with Arteta. There are things that, as much as I want him to succeed, and I really do, I want him to be everything that we want him to be, there are things that have happened over the last few months where I sort of question the management. Not necessarily the coaching, even though there are obviously questions about that, but the management of certain issues and the management of certain players. Mm-hmm. And whether that's having an impact on the squad as a whole or not, I don't know.
I think Arteta, you know, The standout examples of that are the players that have been kind of ostracised or left out of the group. But I think it's as much an issue the players that he has put his faith in.
Well, yeah.
I feel like that is as troubling to me. You know, the fact that he would... I don't know, the positive decisions he's made about players. I'm thinking of people like Willian or Luiz or Xhaka worry me as much as anything else, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, look, there have just been so many issues, you know, with players that are hard to make sense of. And I fully accept that we don't have all the information. I accept that. But, you know, the Socrates, Ozil, Willian, Saliba, all of those things. Mm-hmm. There's probably Guendouzi. More Guendouzi, you know. There are just a lot of those in the last few months that I guess would put your radar on edge a little bit. Put your radar on edge. That's the wrong mixing my metaphors there, but you know what I mean. It just make you go ding ding ding. What's going on here? Is this too many of them, or is it such a thing, or have we been such a basket case of a football club that it's inevitable that if you are going to come in and change the culture and you want to do things your own way, you're going to have these issues until such time as you can build a squad in whatever image it is that you want to build it in. And those things kind of make sense, but they've got to be tied to results also. Like, it's all well and good saying he's going to come in, he's going to change the culture. Well, that's great. But if we're losing week after week...
Well, this is a really interesting question. How much does that matter?
How much does what matter? The culture or...
No. Like, how much does it matter if Arsenal come, like, 12th this season? Like, if there's a sort of long-term justification... And I'm not saying there is, but if it's like, you know, we have to... I don't know. If there's a direction behind that, does it matter?
If you can see what that direction is,
yeah.
I think it's easier to understand it.
I mean, listen, I don't think people will like it.
No, like, nor should they. But
No. But I think it's plausible. Frankly, that will be ensconced somewhere in the mid-table.
Yeah.
But I suppose what I mean is, what if... Like, Arsenal have got into bed with Arteta in a big way. And part of that bargain that they've sort of struck is that he is going to have to learn on the job.
Mm.
And if this season, for example, is a learning experience... Is that something people are prepared to stomach? I don't know the answer to that. My guess is probably not.
No, well, I mean, I guess it depends what he learns and how quickly he learns it and how quickly it becomes apparent that he's learned it. Like, if we go through this terrible period and he reevaluates and starts to do certain things differently or approaches games differently or changes his tactics or whatever it is,
yeah,
it's got to be tied to results, though. But, like, you can't go through the rest of this season lurching to three consecutive home defeats and then a draw and then maybe a big win against, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we beat Tottenham just because of who we are right now. It wouldn't surprise me. But does that make the issues that we have against teams like Leicester and Wolves and Aston Villa, we should never play anyone from the Midlands again. I think that would probably be the thing. But, you know, it doesn't solve that side of things.
Let me say, I will be very surprised if we beat Tottenham.
Yeah, so will I.
The way we are right now.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. I don't know. And of course, like, the hope of improvement, the hope of Arteta learning on the job is a hypothetical. You can't promise anybody that.
Yeah.
And I had something else to say, but I can't remember.
Well, look, I'm sure we'll come back to it in part two. But I think we need to just maybe finish off on the game a little bit in terms of, you know, what we did in that second half. And, you know, one of the issues that I think we've discussed on the podcast before is game management and in-game management. And I know we made the halftime change, and I thought it was interesting to hear, you know, Klopp talking at the weekend about the need for five subs, or his desire, I should say, for five subs because of the demands that are being placed on players at this moment in time. You're reluctant to make your final change because you just don't know if someone's going to pull a hamstring or a calf muscle or a groin or whatever it might be. But it was strange to me that it took until the 81st minute to bring on another striker in a game in which we desperately needed a goal. I know we had a couple of half chances. I mean, I think the Bellerin cross for Saka was maybe a little bit difficult, but the Aubameyang header, I think he should score that. I think there was maybe a lack of conviction in his attempt on goal. So there were a couple of chances, but it still felt a little strange that it took for just 9 minutes left in the game before we brought on Lacazette.
I agree. And look, you had Lacazette and Nketiah both on the bench. Arsenal are being criticised today for chucking in a load of crosses, and I think that's right. But there was also a degree to which game state kind of informed that. You know, Wolves were penned very deep and very narrow, and we're terrible at breaking teams down. So it was kind of inevitable. Given that, not bringing on an extra striker was really bizarre, I thought. And
yeah.
The subs, Nelson for Willian, I could kind of see, you know, but
I don't think it made us.
It didn't change anything.
Didn't change much, did it? Even if I would prefer to see Nelson develop and learn and make some progress than Willian, you know, and acknowledging the fact that he put in a cross which led to our goal.
Neither was better or worse than the other, I wouldn't say, on the night. Like, I genuinely think it made almost no difference.
Yeah, he looked fucked off coming off as well, didn't he?
I'm not saying
that because I feel sorry for him. But, you know, maybe it might fucking buck him up a little bit. And then, you know, I think there was a need to do something more quickly, you know, get rid of
maybe
one of the...
Maybe he was conservative because he'd lost a sub already, but I mean, we did need to change it. Because like I said, I don't think Wolves were any great shakes in that second half. I don't think, that, you know, they really sat in, they
didn't have to be.
No.
They didn't have to be. We must be, like, the easiest team to play against at the moment. Like,
well,
there's no fear factor whatsoever, is there? If you're the opposition, you're looking at Arsenal, you're going, well, who's going to cause us problems today? Maybe Aubameyang, if they can get him into a position in which, you know, he could take a couple of shots. But we can't do that, really, with any great frequency. Maybe someone like Bukayo Saka, who's got the individual quality to do something. But apart from that, who are you worried about?
Not many at all. I mean, we are an easy team to play against. Numbers bear that out. I mean, our opponents keep the ball, I think, almost longer than any other team's opponents. We don't disrupt them. This is what I was going to say.
Yeah.
In terms of the sort of time thing, a team this problematic, I don't think gets good in the space of a season. I just don't see it. I don't see where the improvement's going to come from with this group. Maybe that's just, you know, an emotional response because we've been so bad the last couple of games. And maybe once you add Partey and Pepe and a few others, that changes. But I'm not convinced that either this manager or this group of players, it's suddenly going to click. I'm really not sure. Like, I almost think there's a decision to be made of, like, we get someone in who can make it click quickly and we go for that quick fix, or we just have to let this play out for a much longer time. And football doesn't really work like that. Unless you've got a really clear strategy, a really clear plan that you are able to communicate and that your transfer business backs up and that the fans are on board with, I'm just not sure that's realistic. I'd be fine with it. Honestly, I'd be fine with it. Like, I'd rather... I read your blog the other day about time and, you know, constant change. If you said to me, right, James, it's going to be shit, basically, for another 18 months, but there's going to be a clear plan. We're going to buy young players under the age of 23. We're going to build across that time. And by 2022, we can actually make a serious push for a Champions League place. I'd be like, that's okay. But that's my prerogative and not everyone else is going to feel like that. And there's also no guarantee it would work.
No, but I think... Look, it feels like we are lurching from decision to decision, making short-term decisions because of short-term events.
Yeah, without, and that's hurting us,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I really feel like there is a need for a plan and for a strategy. And I can't imagine that there isn't one. You know, he strikes me as the kind of guy who does think about, you know, how he's going to get the team and how he's going to get the club back to where he wants to get it or where he says he wants to get it. But you have to have the two things. You have to have the plan and you also have to have the right person to execute it. You know?
Yeah, I want to believe there's a plan, but then I just sort of look at Willian and I'm like, how is that in the plan? You know what I mean? It just makes me think that's such a short-term move. Like, if instead of Willian, we'd bought a promising 18-year-old Brazilian who was finding his feet in the league at this point, we'd all be able to go, yeah, but in 12 months, he'll be a hell of a player.
Yeah.
But you can't really do that at the moment. You just kind of feel like, well, half these guys are going to get worse. And so that's why it's sort of troubling. There was, you know, there was a lot that was really frustrating about Project Youth, but it was a clear story that we could all attach ourselves to. And at the moment, there's just been so much change that honestly, like, it's like the ground is constantly moving beneath our feet.
Yeah.
And consequently, a lot of decisions have been taken in very chaotic circumstances and they were not all good decisions.
No. Yeah, to try and fix some of these short-term issues.
To try
issues.
And get a quick fix, exactly. But just because that person was under pressure.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that manager was under pressure or that executive or, you know, things were spiralling beyond their control. There have been a lot of slightly panicky moves. And I mean, I remember we had this conversation in the summer and I was happy that Aubameyang stayed and I was happy that he signed a new contract and I took that as a real positive. But I do remember saying in the conversation, there was a nagging part of me thinking this might be wrong. Like, someone might, as a fan, I was like, I want our best player to stay. I want our top goal scorer to stay. But it's not my job to make that decision. Someone smart needs to be in the room saying, yeah, maybe, but we could get 50 million quid and we could do this with that and that with that. And I just worry, are those smart voices in the room? Are those arguments being made loudly enough? Because there's enough decisions that kind of add up to a slightly worrying picture. And listen, this is all recent and, you know, at Wembley, we were all happy. You know what I mean? But It's evaporated very, very, very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, look, you know, win a few games, Aubameyang scores a few goals and everything looks a bit rosier. But right now, it's very difficult to see that happening, you know?
Yeah, it literally is.
I sort of had this weird notion going into the game last night and I thought to myself, like, how nice would it be to, you know, score a couple of goals early in the game, maybe win relatively comfortably and just sort of build on that. But every time you have a result like that, every time you have a performance like that, it just feels like whatever foundations were being put in place are kind of crumbling a bit, you know?
It is really worrying. It is really worrying. And this league being what it is now, you know, we've been saying this all season. There's no run of games coming up that you think,
no,
oh, we'll win those. And that tells you about the league has changed, but it also tells you where we are. You know,
yeah.
To come back to it, we keep being surprised. We look like a mid-table team, but I sort of worry that that's what we've got.
I remember when I do the match previews for the blog in the not too distant past, I'd be able to say, look, I think, you know, it's going to be a tricky game. X, Y, and Z are, you know, a reasonable team, but I think we've got enough in us to win the game. Or, you know, if we don't take 3 points today, it would be very disappointing, you know, based on who we're playing, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Right now, it feels like if we take 3 points from anyone, it'd be a fucking miracle. You know? It's genuine. Yeah. I can't say that about any team. I look at any team in this league and think, well, that's going to be tough. If we take 3 points from this, I'd be delighted. Not so much. Obviously, losing to Wolves is disappointing, but is it surprising?
I mean, look, these are our league games between now and New Year's Day. So we've got Spurs away, Burnley at home, Southampton at home, Everton away, Chelsea at home, Brighton away, West Brom away. Burnley at home, I think we'll win that. The rest, I've got no clue. Genuinely, well, my suspicion is we won't win them.
Well,
or we'll win some, you know, there'll be some variance, there'll be close games, we'll get the luck and, you know, we'll be mid-table, we'll win some, we'll lose some. That's who we are. And listen, I know that we've got better players than that. I know we should be top, I don't know, 7 or 8 at least.
Well, in terms of the investment in the squad and in terms of the wage bill and everything else, that's, you know, that's the minimum. But when you consider the actual quality of the players, I mean, I think the thing for me is that I look at pretty much every other team in the Premier League right now and I see them play and I think, what is this mad stuff that they're doing? Passing and moving and, you know, getting the ball forward quickly to players in attacking position. What is that? Like, it feels almost like everyone else plays football that is, if not a higher level than we should be aspiring to, at least more organized and coherent than what we're doing right now.
Absolutely. And ball progression is Arsenal's big issue. Like, we all talk about shots. Let's have more shots. And I get that. But that's sort of a bit like saying, let's get more cherries when we haven't baked any cakes. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you've got to get there. We don't get there.
Yeah.
We don't get there. So we don't progress through the midfield, particularly with Sabas and Xhaka at the moment, the way they're playing. I think, you know, I think Lacazette had loads of problems. I really do. But at least he was in that space. And there's just, I mean, yesterday they just felt like there was nobody in that space.
Yeah, let's throw in a load of crosses to fucking Johnny Nobody. Okay, look, we need to take a break here because we've been going for over an hour. We'll be right back with your questions and more in part two right after this, but we cannot guarantee that the discussion based on those questions will not be more of the same.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to part two of the Arscast Extra, in which we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog, and on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Before we get into the questions, I have to read this tweet out, which I thought was very funny. It comes from Dukes, who's at Duke Nans, and he says, "Once again, the main problem with the Arsenal lineup is that it's full of Arsenal players. I do not know how we can get past that hurdle."
It's a made fair me point. Laugh.
Yeah,
it's a really fair point. A difficult obstacle to overcome.
It sure is.
Right, should we have a cheerful question?
Yeah, let's. Well, I also like this one from the Discord, from Sam Kazmi, who says, "Should we just sign Andy Carroll to get on the end of Tierney's crosses, based on what we played?" So.
Yeah, I also like this from Under Freddy on the Discord, who says, "Adama Traore is built like a brick shithouse. How did he go down like that?"
Oh my God, that was funny for people. I think I have that clip here, actually, if you just hold on 1 second. Rob Holding, less than impressed. Hang on 1 second. And...
"He's built like a brick shithouse.
Holding.
How's he gone down like that? He's been like a bitch in house. How's he gone down like that?"
Fair question, to be honest.
Actually, yeah, between Rob Holding, "How's he gone down like that?" and then Hector, "I've thrown like this my whole life." Those two need to have like a high-pitched battle, a rap battle for bats.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully high enough that we don't have to hear it. It's out of our frequency. Okay.
Right.
Let's get into it, shall we?
Yeah.
Where is this question? Here we go. I've lost it, Andrew. You go. I had a really good one, but I've got it.
Okay, phew.
Team Talk KT on the Discord says, "What are the parameters for Arteta to get the sack this season?" And then he adds, "Arsenal went big into the Arteta project over the summer. It feels as if it would take a relegation battle for them to pull the plug."
Yeah, probably something like that, or just not winning any games. If we continue on this streak of three consecutive home defeats. What is it now? It's three from five. Three
West
defeats from our last five.
The early 80s, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we beat Man United away. That was good. But yeah, I mean, we've had two consecutive wins at the start of the league against West Ham and Fulham, but since then it's just two wins from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games, you know, eight games rather. So it's not good. Look, what are the parameters? I guess if it just becomes blindingly obvious that it's not working, or the players have given up, or they don't believe, or if he cannot manage his way out of this period, you know, as we said in the first half, we don't know if he can respond, but if he can get a response from his team, if he can apply some measure of consistency, I think they will obviously stick with him. But if he can't, if it gets worse, if the performances get worse, if the results get worse, if the stats get worse, you know, at some point you have to say, even if you're looking for stability, you know, we've got to do something differently. The good news, I think, for Arsenal fans is I think there are worse teams than us in the league. Are we that classically too good to go down? Have I just jinxed us into the championship? I don't think so. I think we've got...
No, there's some bad teams out there.
Some bad teams out there. And, you know, maybe that's our fail-safe. But, you know, yeah, I think it's just a question of looking at what happens. But like you said, we've gone big on him. So I feel like they're going to give him the time. They're going to give him the opportunity to turn things around.
So than with Emery, right? They're more invested in Arteta than they were.
Yeah.
They've made him manager. They've spoken very publicly about their support right up to ownership level. I don't think his job is in jeopardy right now, for example. I think, like all managers, if he loses the dressing room, there's kind of no choice.
Yeah.
Is the awkward reality. And I don't think that is the case right now. But results win you the faith of the players as much as the fans, you know?
Yeah, but again, we go back to like winning the cup a few months ago and everybody seemed to be bought into it and Aubameyang stayed because he believed in Arteta. You know, that was part of why he stayed and the same, you know, why they invested in Saka, you know, all of those things. So it's easy to view things when through a very dark lens when it's not going well. You know, to look at everything and everybody and think, well, this is fucked from top to bottom. Nobody's any good. And we're basically fucked as a football club, as an institution, an organization, RIP Arsenal.
Yeah.
You know, it is. And look, that might be the case. Maybe nobody is any good. Maybe we are completely and utterly fucked. But, you know, it felt better a few short weeks ago when the sun was shining and everything else. So it's possible that it can come back the other way, you know?
Yeah, it can change quick.
Luther Jumberg, who's at Jumberg Luther, says, seeing as Arteta and Edu lack obvious experience in their respective roles and the club seemingly being rudderless or lacking clear direction, could or should an addition such as Ralph Rangnick or, dare I say, Arsene Wenger be explored?
I think they should be explored. I think it'll be difficult to justify to Edu. I think what we're basically saying there is, can we not have a better version of Edu? Isn't it?
Kinda, I guess.
Like, you know, if Arsene Wenger, I mean, it's not going to happen, but like if a very senior figure comes in above Edu, well, I suppose he had that in Seigneur, so it's just reverting to that.
But it would be an obvious demotion now. Not that I would have any problem with that, by the way.
No. That's it. I mean, I sort of think it's fair to ask the question, should we have someone more experienced there? But I do think maybe it would come at the expense of one of the inexperienced people, unless they were just prepared to swallow it and be like, yeah, I'm going to learn my trade under Ralph Rangnick for the next 3 years. I think that's not a bad shout. Football experience is very lacking, isn't it, at the highest level of the club?
Oh, it is, yeah. It is, because we've got... I mean, look, Edu has experience. There's no question about it. He has experience at club level with Corinthians and obviously with the Brazil national team, but in a different role, I think.
Different role, than the one he's expected as well.
Yeah, of course, than the one he's expected to fill in now. And Arteta, his inexperience, we're all very much aware of, and we knew that going into this. At executive level, what else is there? You know, the contracts guy is gone. Raul Sanyehi is gone. Again, not shedding any tears over these people, but they're gone.
No.
Vinay is very much the business side of it. You know, that's the other side of the club.
Lewis, theoretically, you know, his remit should be more on that side as well.
Yeah. I mean, he can look at the processes and look at, you know, what's going on from that perspective. But yeah, it's more about the running of the organization than the running of the football club. I mean, to what extent should we, as a football club, operate in a way which, how do I put this, makes the role of manager slash head coach, whatever you want to call it, more transient's not the right word, but
expendable.
Sort of expendable. Like, the club has a philosophy. The club has a playing style. The club has players that it wants to bring in. And you, as the head coach slash manager, are going to operate within that framework. Now, it feels like we're in a position where the club's strategy or identity is maybe too closely tied to the manager.
Well, we've come full circle, haven't we?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
But then, well, let me ask you this.
Mm.
Let's say somebody made a decision to get rid of Mikel Arteta tomorrow. Would you feel comfortable in trusting Edu with being that person?
No.
Yeah.
No, but this is what I mean. Like, when we talked about identity in the first part of the show, like, what is it? What is it, and how do we get it, and how do we build it, and how do we rebuild it, or you know, where does it come from? Should it come from the club, or should it come from, you know, the manager? And maybe in a year's time, we're sitting here going, wow, okay, now I see where we are, who we are, what we want to do, how we want to do it, and I can see how we put the building blocks in place, you know, to build a team and everything else. Right?
So I have to be fair to Arteta and to the club, which is that my understanding is that there was at least in the summer some sort of plan. You know, a vision was presented by Edu, which was like, this is how we want to play, and these are the players we need to get to that point. And it's not what we're seeing at the moment. That's for sure. What I was told is that it was based around playing with a 4-3-3. You know, obviously Thomas Partey was pretty much the key piece in that, potentially with another creative midfield player.
Mm. I like that. I like the sound of that.
Yeah. But we're not there yet, are we?
That's the fucking understatement of the year right there.
But what I mean is, we're not even really there that we could sort of pretend at it. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, clearly Arteta's made a decision technically that we're so far from there in terms of personnel that we're not even really going to attempt it.
But then are you not better doing it and creating?
I think so, yeah.
You know, do it even if you don't necessarily have all the players you might like, but play that way and play with that system and play with whatever, you know, plan you have. And as you... you know, you see shortcomings or whatever, you replace those pieces or you upgrade on the pieces, you know, that you need to upgrade on, but you put them into the system that's already there. Mm. Like, I don't know what it is we're doing right now. I don't know what our intent is in games. I don't know how we want to attack. Here we go with the I don't knows again. But if you have a philosophy, if you have a style of play, I get there's a need for expediency and everything else, but surely it'd be better to just say, this is what we're doing. And as time goes on, we're going to make it better bit by bit by bit. You know, is that not what, I know it's a spurious comparison, but is that kind of not what Klopp did at Liverpool? In that when he came in, he played in a specific way, or, you know, he wanted his players to operate within a specific way, you know, in terms of how they pressed and everything else. And some of his players weren't very good at it. And their results were up and down and they fluctuated and everything else. But, you know, over time, it became the philosophy of the club and the way that the club played, the team, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine I'll be in a minority here, but I kind of feel that is the progression that we were making until quite recently. Like, although ostensibly we sort of played with a three at the back, you know, in possession, it sort of wasn't really that. And there were little tweaks happening that made me think there's a direction of travel. There's like a movement, an evolution happening in this team.
Mm.
What worries me now is that I don't... It's like we've sort of adopted a different plan now. Like, I don't see any of the kind of, and you know, there were flaws within it. So for example, like, eventually we had to let go of the third centre back thing entirely and let that be a midfield player. And you know, Lacazette was never going to be the long term centre forward. He didn't have the energy, yeah, or the quality. But eventually we'd get one, or Aubameyang would move. But I just feel like it feels like either we've gone too quickly or we've moved too fast. But it just feels like the blueprint has gone. You know, it feels like he's gone back to the drawing board almost.
Mm.
It's a really, really tough position, by the way, for him to be in now. And as an inexperienced manager who himself doesn't know that he can come through this. I mean, it's really difficult. I think we are going to find out, because I don't think he's going anywhere.
Find out one way or the other anyway, but...
Well, that's it, yeah. We will find out. I mean, you know, it will have to get, in answer to sort of the original question, it will have to get pretty, pretty bad for him to be sacked, because
I think the word you're looking for is worse.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I think it would have to be catastrophic, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. And maybe that's the wise way to approach it. Maybe. But again, we're sitting here projecting and hoping and everything else. Look, a lot depends on how we respond. But, you know, I was looking last night for Arsenal to respond after two home defeats and after a disappointing game against Leeds. You're looking for a response. And there really wasn't one.
No. And even if we get something against Spurs.
Yeah. It was slightly better in the second half. But I think that was as much to do with Wolves sitting back and being prepared to soak up the pressure and maybe trying to hit us on the break, which they tried to do a couple of times.
Well, what does that tell you as well? They believed they could soak up that pressure.
Yeah, of course. Of course. There aren't many teams out there right now, if they go a goal up against Arsenal, aren't going to feel, well, you know, it would be a disappointment now if we don't take 3 points.
I mean, the funny thing is, I think Wolves and Arsenal are actually quite similar teams. I think, like, they profile quite similarly, but they basically, you know, they don't really want the ball. They will hurt you in a counter-attack, maybe, but their main emphasis is on protecting their goal. I do think, yeah, tactically, the ideas aren't that far apart right now. Shall we have another question?
Mm-hmm.
Air North says, why are we complaining about the Europa League? They're the only games worth watching.
Who's complaining at this point?
I mean, speaking of eggs in baskets.
Yeah.
That's got to be an increasing priority for us, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it always was anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Especially once we get out the group stage and we're into the knockouts. I mean, I think you'll be seeing really strong teams from Arsenal.
Yeah, look, once you get to the knockout stages, you could be facing pretty decent teams, but I think...
I fear for us against a team dropping in from the Champions League, that's for sure.
Yeah. Is that still a thing?
I think so.
Right. I thought I read somewhere that maybe wasn't, or...
Oh, really? Anyway, that would be really great if that's true.
I don't know. I could be completely wrong. I could be completely wrong, but... okay, here's a question from arm_in on the Discord, who says, do you think there's any chance that at some point Arteta will go full youth and ditch all the usual fuckers? Would fans be more forgiving if he gave more chances to Haaland youth?
For a bit. Yeah, for a bit they would. But results are everything.
Mm.
Honestly, results are absolutely everything. And, you know, we can hypothesise about, oh, we'll just play the kids. But as soon as you start losing games, it's going to be an
kids
issue
aren't good enough then either, so, yeah.
Exactly.
We need more experience immediately.
Freddie didn't he, kind of, in one of his games? His last game in charge, he kind of put a load of kids out. Goodson Park, wasn't it, 0-0?
Yeah, actually, yeah. He did. He dropped pretty much everybody, didn't he?
Yeah, it was like a real statement team. Arteta was in the stands that day.
That's right.
Is this a thing that he doesn't give chances to kids? I'm not sure I fully buy that. You know, I think Saka's playing, Willock's now playing.
I think he's keen to make sure that kids aren't just thrown in and left exposed and left to kind of fend for themselves, because, you know, there is a need to find some balance, you know, between youth and experience.
I think the bigger problem is our experienced players aren't performing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, Gabriel's only 22 or something. He's been probably our best player. You know, Kieran Tierney's not an old man.
He's only 22 as well, yeah.
They're young guys. I think it's, you know, the experienced players that we're most worried about.
The team that day included from the start Maitland-Niles, Smith-Rowe, Saka, Nelson and Martinelli. That Freddie picked that day. I mean, it wasn't good, though. It was a terrible game,
if
I remember
awful,
correctly.
Yeah, I went up to Everton. It was dreadful. Absolutely awful. I'm not sure throwing all the kids in is going to make it better. I'm really, really not. What about this? Lots of questions about Aubameyang. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Ashton on Twitter, are you concerned by how disinterested Aubameyang looks? Do you think he might be sick of our approach or fed up of a lack of quality around him? And then JG says, is Aubameyang a good captain? When he's not scoring, he looks dejected and struggles to empower others on the pitch.
Look, if you're looking for a Tony Adams style captain, then, you know, that's not who Aubameyang is.
And it's never who he's been.
No, it's not. It's not. And nobody was complaining about Aubameyang's captaincy when he was scoring the goals to beat Man City and beat Chelsea to take us to the cup, you know?
Yeah.
So there was no question about that side of things. Does he look pissed off? Yes, he does. There's no question about it. Would I be pissed off if I were him and I was playing
not
in a team?
Not with all that money.
Even so, scoring goals is more important than money for me, James. Can tell you that.
So on the sort of debate of, is the problem Arsenal or is the problem Aubameyang, are you firmly on the, it's Arsenal?
I'm saying it's a little from column A and a bit from column B. You know, I think he is a player who is going through a poor run of form. It's unfortunate that, you know, his first bad run of form has come after he signed a massive new contract, because I think we as Arsenal fans are somewhat
scarred by that.
Yes, once bitten, twice shy and all that. You know, there is something in our recent history which makes us hypersensitive to that. But I do think it is as much down to the team not providing him with a great deal of service. Like, I know he had a shot against Leeds and he had one last night, didn't he?
What? It's just funny, isn't it? Being like, obviously, I know he had a shot against Leeds.
Yeah,
like, we're clinging to that.
I guess so. But, you know, it's not like he's been given three or four clear-cut chances a game and he's missing them all. Like, he missed one last night, but it was really the only one.
He nearly got on the end of that Tierney cross in the first half. Do you remember?
Good defending from Cody,
yeah,
I think
really
it was.
Really good defending, actually.
Yeah, look, I think maybe because he is the captain, he feels more responsibility. I don't know. Maybe, you know, that's part of why he's so pissed off, because he knows as captain, you know, he's the supposed leader of the team and feels a bit more responsibility. I don't know. But, like, I think he is pissed off, and I can understand why he is pissed off. But the solution isn't, you know, simply down to him.
Yeah, I mean,
do you think, after the joy of winning the FA Cup and signing a new deal and being proud of that and everything he's talked about, you know, he's proud of being captain and he's like a mentor to a lot of these young players. They really like him and he feels, you know, not responsible for them, but, he connects with those young players really well, you know, from what you hear on the training ground. You know, he's a good guy to have around, et cetera, et cetera. I don't believe that he's just stopped giving a shit.
No.
I don't believe that. I think it's just part of the wider malaise. And we're extrapolating from that because there are other factors which have terrified us in the past.
Listen, he's happy if he's scoring goals, and he's not scoring goals at the moment. And some of that is on him, but a lot of it is on the team. I think it's so hard assessing the attacking players genuinely, because I do think they just don't get the ball. So I don't know what to say about it. I mean, Aubameyang, there's no service. So he's not a player and has never been a player, really. In fact, I tell a lie. I was going to say he's not a player who sort of scores remarkable individual solo goals that you're kind of, you know, that are like one man efforts. In reality, there were times last season when he was that. You know, when he was scoring goals from positions which were unreasonable to expect him to score from. And he was outperforming his XG. He was, you know, doing pretty heroic stuff. But he's not someone who's consistently done that across his career. And he's someone who is dependent on service. And I think it's just not there. It's just not there at all. So no wonder he looks pissed off. I mean, you know, ostensibly, Aubameyang, Lacazette, Willian, they're all in really, really bad form. But I kind of think it's unlikely that they would all be in really bad form at once without there being quite significant outside factors in that. You know, without there being reasons. And there must be, there are reasons. We don't attack well.
Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, and I mean, they're probably all pissed off. I mean, you said Willian looked pissed off when he went off yesterday. I'm sure Lacazette was pretty pissed off, sat there for 81 minutes. I'm sure Aubameyang's pissed off not getting any service. I'm sure they're all royally fucked off. And it doesn't mean there's no blame on them and they couldn't do better, but the team is not serving them at all.
Yeah, I'm sort of curious to what extent the team themselves might, or how they might feel about this and the way that they're being asked to play.
Like, knowing footballers, they won't be happy at all because they're not winning.
Yeah.
I mean, do you remember when Arteta came in, what we heard from the players was, what we love about him is he has a really clear plan. He tells you how things are going to happen on the pitch and then they happen like that.
Yeah.
And that's why we believe in him. And that belief must be shaken right now. It would only be logical for it to be shaken. But that's the weird thing about Arteta. Like, it's not like that didn't happen. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it never worked. Or he said, well, we're in a long process and eventually we'll get some results. He showed a capacity to improve players and get results. It's just hit an absolute dead end, hasn't it?
We certainly hit a wall.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of that is being figured out by opponents. I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
Them being onto what we do. But maybe it's also just a kind of a point in his individual development.
I mean, we've said before, haven't we, that, you know, there are always going to be some bumps in the road. Our friend West Antone says, hopefully there'll be some road in the bumps soon, because it feels like just a lot of fucking bumps.
Yeah, there's this road near me, which is like all bumps. And I hate going down it because you've got to go so slow. And even when you do, we're on that road, basically. The underside, my underside is getting scuffed by all these bumps.
Enough about your undercarriage. Thank you very much. I don't know what else we can really discuss, because so many of the questions are the same. One more then from Tempo Physio, who says, should we go to a back three until Partey returns? I'd rather draw 0-0 than lose.
100%. For me, no doubt in my mind that against Tottenham, we should be employing what I'll call the FA Cup final tactics. You know, I'd probably bring Elneny in as well if he's fit and he can play, if he's well.
So what's your team for Tottenham then?
Emi Martinez.
Can I just say that our goalkeeper playing in our away kit is a fucking shambles. I know it's not the biggest thing in the grand scheme, but it's just, why did that happen?
It's something to do with a clash with Wolves' kit.
Why don't Wolves change their fucking kit? They're away.
I know. I don't know. They forgot to bring it with them. I don't know. It was weird.
No, but this was earmarked the day before the game. They put up the colours on the Arsenal website and everyone's like, what the fuck? What's he doing wearing that?
I don't understand kits because sometimes we should be wearing away kits and we're not, or we wear the third kit. I mean, the rules have all gone out the window.
But, you know, we as the home team should wear our proper home kit, and Wolves, figure it out yourselves. I don't care if your goalkeeper plays in a fucking...
They can play skins.
Yeah, skins, whatever. You know? Bullshit.
Traore has been waiting for that opportunity to be able to get his top off during the game.
He's so strong looking. Holy shit.
God, I used to play left back in Sunday League quite a lot. Yeah, and right wingers are often a team's best player, I've found, because they're usually quick.
I like the way you're... Yeah. I like the way you're projecting that. It's uncanny that every team we play, the right winger appears to be the best player. What's going on here?
No, but I was honestly watching Tierney last night. I was having flashbacks to like me chasing after these right wingers. Fucking hell. Traore, I mean, I feel like there's this weird perception that he's not good. People are like, well, he's inconsistent. It's like, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because he just gets past his man four times a game. Do you know what I mean? Like, eventually it works.
Yeah.
I'd take him over Willian. I'll say it like that.
Oh, fucking right I would. See the way you fucking diddle Xhaka for the second goal as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, Xhaka, you're looking for one, from there.
The
but
one time you're looking for Xhaka to do one of his patented fucking clumsy midfield rugby tackle fouls.
Whatever's needed at that point. Yeah, I mean, Traore, he's like our kryptonite anyway. He's everything we hate. He's pace, he's power, he's direct.
Delivery. It's, you know,
yeah, it's everything Arsenal don't want. And Wolves know that, and they use him very intelligently against us.
We don't even want it in our own team, let alone the opposition.
Yeah, and I mean... Actually, you know, when we won at Wolves in the Project Restart, I mean, he should have scored a couple of goals, probably. Mm. So, anyhow, what are we talking about?
Team for Spurs.
Leno, Gabriel, please. Tierney, and then, I guess, Rob Holding.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, Gabriel is the centre part of the back three.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think that is right. I think that is the right three. You know, Luiz might be available, but I think, you know, given how much Spurs look for Harry Kane, I think Holding and Gabriel will make a certain degree of sense.
Luiz versus Tottenham is at least one penalty waiting to happen.
Very true. I would play Ainsley Maitland-Niles as a wing-back, probably as a left wing back with Son coming onto his left from the right hand side.
I agree with that.
I don't know if we're allowed to play Ainsley Maitland-Niles anymore. I don't know if Wolves actually bought him and it was just really hushed up. I don't know.
Not in the squad at all yesterday, which was interesting. Yeah. Whether he just had a little bit of a knock from the Europa League game, we don't know.
Too emotional for him to play against Wolves, the team he might have joined.
Got some game time for.
Yeah, so I'd play him on the left, Bellerin on the right. I would play...
So you got a midfield too?
Yeah. Slim pickings, isn't it?
Mm.
Ceballos wasn't much better than Xhaka.
No.
I would say. And I'd pick Elneny. Let's say I'll pick Elneny.
I would pick Elneny and I would probably just err on the side of Ceballos over Xhaka.
So would I, but it's close. I'm telling you now, it's close.
Well, like, that says a lot about Ceballos.
And then I would go... So I would go back to Lacazette, Aubameyang to the left, and I'd play Saka from the right. That's what I would do.
I could live with that.
We know how to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not great, but I think it will keep us in the game. I think it will make it a contest. And I can't bear to see Mourinho Spurs win that game. Fucking hell.
No, let's... Look, we've got a week, basically, before that happens. Or could happen. So let's not try and spend it...
Yeah, and listen, misery. I mean... genuinely, I am so happy there's going to be some supporters in the ground on Thursday in the competition where we actually win games and score goals as well. That is a ray of something nice amidst all this gloom.
Yeah, so it's Arsenal Rapid Vienna on Thursday with some fans in the ground.
The big one.
Yeah, those of you who are going to be there, enjoy. Enjoy. You enjoy it as well, James.
We'll try to.
And look, we will leave it there for now. Hopefully, if you've come this far, it's been somewhat therapeutic for you. I feel slightly better having talked it through, even if I don't really have any answers still. All we can do is hope for a response, and fingers crossed we get that next weekend. So for now, we'll leave it there, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.